You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey, y'all. Uncle Jimmy here. When you speak for yourself, you're forced to think for yourself. And when you think for yourself, the sports world looks different. In order to enjoy this podcast and this show, you need to have the courage to look at the world from alternative points of view and not be offended when you disagree. Speak for Yourself isn't your Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram feed. SFY tells you what you need to hear and not what you want to hear. So, welcome aboard, buckle up, and enjoy the ride.
I'm Marcel Swally. Whitlock is off today. Coming up, we'll tell you if Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving are a toxic combination. But right now, I'm joined by Fox NFL analyst LeVar Arrington, who just called me Barney, Mark Slerv, and TJ Houshmandzadeh. So let's start with Tom Brady. Brady's football future is still up in the air, but we just got some insight into his plans off the field, with the GOAT launching a production company with the directors of the Avengers. Last all-time great athlete to launch a Hollywood production company was who? LeBron James, who ended up on the Lakers not long after. And there have already been rumors that Brady might end up on my Chargers. So the question is, are the boats the best fit for the GOAT? And I would have to say yes.
Of course you would.
I would have to. I'm not even talking on the field. Of course they are in terms of talent construction of this roster. But I'm talking off the field as well, as we see with this news of him having a production company. It just makes sense if you're going to go into your twilight years and ride off in the sunset. No guarantees off the field, on the field, I should say, you know, to go out there and beat Patrick Mahomes in your same division, let alone represent the AFC in the Super Bowl. Lofty goals, but this is a talented enough team to do that if Tom Brady's in the mix. But off the field, it just makes too much sense for you to even drown out the potential that can happen on the field. So I'm looking at Tom Brady in this point of his career, obviously feeling the challenge to prove that his legacy is not always coupled with Bill Belichick. Let me show you what I'm worth beyond what Bill Belichick and I created. And let's go to L.A. It makes sense. The stadium's here. The team is here. And now it's production companies here.
There's a lot of layers to that. And I appreciate you trying to navigate through those layers.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
I mean, it's a no for me. And again, I'm going to continue to ring this bell. And, again, you guys do what you want to do with it. But I think his best chance and his best opportunity, what makes the most sense, is in Foxborough with the Patriots.
And lose to the Titans.
And, yeah. Well, you know what? Even in losing at this point in his career, the best place for him to lose is in New England. Like, let's be clear. If he goes somewhere and starts over and starts losing there, it has a much more catastrophic effect. Look at it this way. He's opening that production house and that production company as a what, right? What has he been? He has not been on a different team, right? So he's been able to open up this production company based off of his reputation that he built as a Patriot. I like the coaching staff better in New England. I think the best sense.
You think?
Yes.
You think?
I think the best sense for Tom Brady is New England.
Mm. Well, I don't think there's any question that if he stayed in New England, they bolstered the roster on the offensive side. Of course, that's your best option. But I'm under the assumption that they don't want him, otherwise they'd already have him.
Yep.
That's what I'm under the assumption. And if I'm talking about Tom Brady leaving the New England Patriots, I think the Chargers make a ton of sense. I think from the standpoint of what kind of weaponry do you have, I think Keenan Allen's one of the best wide receivers that nobody ever talks about. Maybe because he just doesn't wow you with athleticism, but he's tough, he's big, he runs unbelievable routes. He's one of those guys, and there's very few of these guys, kind of the Hines Ward. He's the kind of actuator of the offense. I mean, he talks a little smack, kind of like you, TJ. Talked a lot of smack and, you know, gotten a lot of fights, you know, and that kind of guy that energizes an offense. If they re-sign Hunter Henry, Austin Eckler, one of the best backs out of the backfield, I think they've got a really solid Trey Turner, who they just traded for to play guard, is an all-pro guard. They need to draft a tackle. They need to develop a tackle, but I look at them offensively and think that with Tom Brady, this football team automatically can compete in that division, the AFC West. So, yeah, I think this is the one thing that makes more sense to me. Forget the production company. This just from a team standpoint makes sense to me.
Yeah, I'm going to say just football. Yeah, it makes sense. The only thing that concerns me is you got to play Mahomes twice. You got to play the Broncos twice, who should be better with that defense. And the Raiders are improving. Yeah. And so if you look at Brady in his division with New England, he's had it pretty easy with the Dolphins, the Jets, and the Bills. And so now you go to this division. That's the only thing that concerns me. The thing that I like is what you just said, is they acquired Trey Turner. They're trying to fortify that offensive line, which was their weakness last year. And so it can look a little more appealing to Tom Brady. Do we get Brady? What do we do with our first-round pick? Do we draft a quarterback to develop, or do we acquire another lineman? Offensively, weapon-wise, they have everything. It's not just Keenan Allen. You got Mike Williams. They have Hunter Henry if they can re-sign him. Austin Eckler. And then you go to the defensive side of the ball. He has a defense and a defensive line that can keep him in games. And so from that perspective, just pure football, I like it. But what I don't like is you have to face that division with Mahomes twice, the Denver Broncos twice, and an improving Raider. That right there, that's going to be tough sledding.
Look, if we look at the roster and dive a little deeper into it, we're saying the names, but we also know that they need something, and that's a third receiver. We talk about Mike Williams. We talk about Keenan Allen.
There you go.
Antonio Brown.
It ain't going to be the third one. He's going to be the best one.
We just got to put him there on the roster in terms of what it looks like, but we know what it's going to be.
Curtains.
It's going to be different. It's going to be curtains, right? Yeah. And then you talk about Austin Eckler, one of only six running backs, 1,500 total plus yards, 10-plus touchdowns. So that James
92 receptions.
Thank you.
92.
So talk about James White. Oh, I may miss James White. No, you won't. You're going to get you Austin Eckler right now, who just got a new deal. Derwin James fully healthy. Yes. Bosa, Ingram.
And you know why it makes a lot of sense, too, is if you look at the offensive coordinator for the Chargers, he's just getting started. So Brady can come with his philosophies and things that he likes, and I believe that coordinator will be open to, okay, let's try to put some of these concepts in. Now, you go to a guy like, say, Bruce Arians, he's setting his ways. This is my offense. We're going to run our offense. But you go to the Chargers, you got an offensive coordinator. It's his first year as a new offensive coordinator. He seems like he would be open to whatever Brady wants the West to run.
And how about the draft? This is one of the best tackle drafts, they say, in a long time. Four guys projected to go in the top 15. Chargers grab one of them. You got a line.
I'm going to come
back. What Pouncey being healthy?
I'm going to come back to my original point, guys.
What, losing New England?
What was the Chargers' overall record this year?
You mean 12-4 the year before?
No. I was talking about this year.
Before the injuries?
Tell me this year, Mr. Bolt.
I can't do that because I'm an ambassador. Okay. I say positive
and as an ambassador, you cannot answer that question.
And you know, but
under the pretenses that it will incriminate.
5-11. Okay, LaVar.
No.
5-11.
What was the 49ers record last year, too, prior to them going
4-12.
Okay, and who was their quarterback? Who was their quarterback in that 4-12 year?
Jimmy. No. Two of those games.
Nick Mullins was one. And
Garoppolo.
Beathard was another.
Garoppolo was there.
We had a beginner.
You're talking about almost a 5-11 team. You're talking, and that is the personnel you're talking about. All the guys you're throwing out there.
No, Derwin James hurt most of the year. Pouncey
gets
hurt.
Hey, if Brady is that guy, you don't think this team improves? You don't think they improve?
It comes back. Brady is not the coach. You got to be able to dial up the right calls. You got to be able to dial up the right scouting reports.
I had a conversation with the head coach of the Chargers just the end of last season, who would love to move into a direction where you have a more athletic quarterback.
Mm.
Unless, of course, Brady's available, because he said Brady is the one dude in the league right now that can still eviscerate you from the pocket and manipulates the pocket.
And that could be the main major reason why it is such a catastrophic happening for the L.A. Chargers, is putting that much pressure on thinking that Brady is going to be your
savior. That first game, you'll be tuned in.
I will be.
You'll be tuned in.
I ain't got to tune in.
And then the ratings will go
down. I will be using one of my 8 season tickets.
Well, I'll be calling you.
Yeah, for free. Well, let's move to Dallas, guys, where the Cowboys have reportedly upped their offer to Dak Prescott, topping $105 million guaranteed and $33 million per year in their initial offer. Dallas would need an answer soon, even though the NFL just extended the deadline to use the franchise tag until Monday. The question is, Cowboys look desperate here. And I'm going to say no. I'm looking at the Cowboys as they're just trying to jumpstart this negotiation. They know that in April we're going to start our offseason workouts, and we know we have the July 15th to have a long-term extension in place or else the franchise tag stands. We know the CBA. We don't know what's going to happen with that vote that's going to happen Saturday from the players. But if you look at what's happening with the Cowboys, a lot of times in this world, people want to say you look desperate when you're really just trying to show desire. Mm-hmm. And I think right now the Cowboys desire Dak Prescott. The only difference between what they're seeing in Dak Prescott and what he's seeing in himself is that he's not going to give that discount for being Captain America, for wearing a star on his helmet, for being the quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys. He knows that comes with marketing opportunities, and it should. But Dak Prescott's made $4.7 million in his 40 years as being a quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys on the field. And that's where his focus is, on the field. So I don't think the Cowboys look desperate. They're showing their desire, and they want to get something done. They just got to come to that same number in union.
Yeah, it's not desperation here. It's a no for me. And one thing that I think is very interesting here, they're trying to offer him a multi-year deal and giving him $33 million. They're trying to beat this franchise tag deadline is what's going on right now. But not only are you trying to beat the deadline, you're trying to give him the old numbers, the old CBA numbers for multiple years. Now, here's where it gets a little interesting, and I was just trying to break it down in my head why this makes a ton of sense. You get that franchise tag, you get hurt, you're in bad shape. That's why everybody frowns upon franchise tags. Yeah, they want that stability, right?
Long term.
But if you're talking about getting a multi-year deal that gives you this number that you're maybe not necessarily looking for, but it takes you out beyond 1 year, then you're saying, okay, if we give you the franchise tag, how much is that franchise tag going to be? $33 million, around $32, $33 million. If we're offering you $33 million, we're offering you multiple years on top of what this is. We're trying to offer you stability that you have not had in the tune of this number before now.
I don't think it's desperate. I think it's disingenuous. Hey, if you want a discounted contract, if you want a hometown contract, then you have to come to me with a full year left on my deal and say, let's rip this damn thing up and actually pay me. I'll give you a discount at that point, right? Because yeah. I'll give you that year back in exchange for that cash. And that's when you get an actual discount. But you can't wait till the contract's expired and then say, hey, will you give us a discount, right? That's disingenuous. I look at that and I say, that is bad business for the Dallas Cowboys. At what point did you realize that he was going to be your quarterback of the future? Was it in year two when he was cutting up the whole league and went to the divisional round and lost on a miracle play to Aaron Rodgers? Did you know he was your quarterback then? Why didn't you not take care of him then? Because you didn't have to. That's why. So I look at this as disingenuous. Trying to sign a deal right now when you're a week away from a vote on a new CBA where you know there's going to be new money?
New money.
That's disingenuous.
Yeah.
Like, so why would you, if you're Dak Prescott, give anybody a discount? No, but it's not Dak Prescott's responsibility to manage their cap. It's their responsibility to manage their cap. And I've even heard players talk about, I heard Emmitt Smith say, he should give them a discount so they can sign other players and make it back in marketing. Yeah, until you get hurt, and then you know what your value in marketing is? It's zero. He doesn't owe them anything. They owe him.
For me, it's not desperate. It's getting close, though. It's getting close to desperation because they want to get this deal done before the CBA because they know what the salary cap is going to look like and it's going to explode. Now, desperation is when they start signing, okay, we're just going to give you $36, $37 million. They're not desperate. They're doing what any team does. It's negotiations. Mm-hmm. We offer you this. You come back with that. We don't think. If they thought Dak Prescott was worth what he wanted, they would have given it to him. If they thought he was a quarterback of the future last year, they would have given him what he wanted. They're unsure. And that's why you have this tug of war, because if his name was Patrick Mahomes, it would be, what do you want, Patrick? If he was a first round pick, it would be, what do you want, Dak? Because he was drafted in the first round, they had that uncertainty.
To your point, though, from a desperation standpoint and that franchise tag, that's where the desperation comes in, because they don't want to use it
that's
on
correct.
Him. They'd like to use it on Byron Jones.
Or Amari Cooper.
That's where they want to have the freedom to franchise. They don't want to franchise Dak and then lose two other players. So that's really
And then they get a gift and they extend the franchise tag till Monday.
So yeah, I don't know if they're desperate. I just think they're playing it cheap. They played it cheap the entire 4 years. Like,
why don't
you there?
But you know why, though? It's because of what you see. You get so many people on TV or former players that say, oh, man, he should take a discount. Right. And I think they believe he should really take a discount.
It's easy to spend other people's money.
Oh, that's really, when it's really, not yours.
Well, let's keep talking about other people's money.
Really quick,
keep
though.
Keep talking about it.
Yeah, no, I'll talk about it. I would ask you this.
That's what we do.
I'd ask you this. Like, for Dak Prescott and for the Cowboys in general, like, that franchise tag obviously has value. They don't want to use it on Dak Prescott. They want to use it on another player. Like,
I mean, would you prefer to go $33 million on a franchise or $18 million for Amari? They would rather have that $15 million to be able to wiggle room and sign other
players.
But
this is why you have great representation, and I respect Todd France from this position. He won't allow the Cowboys to erase the mental scoreboard that Dak Prescott has in his head, which says
they're
this.
They're trying to bully him.
I made $4.7 million in 4 years, and Jared Goff made $49.67. Okay, he did go to the Super Bowl. I give you that. But Carson Wentz, what the hell has he done ever in January? And he made 39.6. Now, that's 49, 39, 4. He will never make that money back up. You know why? Because when he gets his money, they're going to say, oh, good for you. You make a million more than me. Good luck trying to close the gap on $45
million. You got 35 more to go.
You also got to keep in mind that mini camps are coming up. The draft is coming up. They need to know that they have their franchise quarterback. I think this is a whole lot different than the Ezekiel Elliott situation. You can't afford to not have the leader of your offense there during mini camps, training camps. Doesn't look right.
Why do we continue? Why does it keep getting pushed back, the franchise tag thing? Like, does the Players Association agree to go, hey, yeah, you guys can push it back another couple of days?
It helps the team. It doesn't help the players.
Just like this new deal's going to help the teams,
like,
right?
Don't let them push
Gambling
it back.
Is coming. Yeah. No opt-outs in this new CBA for a decade? Hell no. LeVar Arrington, Mark Schlereff, and TJ Houshmandzadeh are back. Time now for a big story. Let's move to the NFL draft, where everybody's saying Joe Burrow is guaranteed to go first overall. But he could be facing some stiff competition for that top spot. Reportedly, Tua has been cleared for all football activities 4 months after suffering a dislocated hip and will hold his pro day April 9th. Health concerns have been the only knock against Tua heading into the draft. So the question is, should Burrow still be a lock to go first over Tua? Man, I don't understand why people keep saying Joe Burrow is that thing. Like, he has to be number one. I understand the story to Cincinnati, so Cincinnati's sitting at that position. I get it. But as a talent evaluator, would you take one insane year or someone who had one insane career? And think about it. Like, Tua, in his career, has the highest passing rating efficiency of any quarterback ever. That means I'm the most deadly and accurate with this football ever. And in the year that Burrow was actually winning as the single season leader, Tua was on pace before the injury to even have that record. So, all things considered, I look at Tua the way he throws the football, how he deciphers in the pocket, how he delivers in the pocket, how he's a leader, how he went to Alabama. Even Nick Saban has said on record, this guy is a tremendous leader. I would take Tua over Joe Burrow because it just seems like Joe Burrow had the perfect marriage in LSU his last year. Mm. Let's not forget that he was there for 2 years. Let's not forget that he had to leave a school to go there because he couldn't beat out Dwayne Haskins.
Tell him powder.
So all I'm saying is, these are just warts. Look, I'm splitting hairs. These are two tremendous talents.
But when it don't sound like you're splitting hairs.
Well, when I bang on somebody, it's going to be more. Okay. I'm just going to tell you, if I had to pick, Tua can go into a situation, beat out a talent, like a Jalen Hurts, go out there, win a national championship, have an insane career, and not just sit there and say, I potentially could be just a one-hit wonder. It's Tua for me.
Yeah, I'm going to say yes, that he goes, Burrow goes over Tua, but purely based upon what I don't know about Tua's health. And if I'm looking at it player to player, I've already gone on record as saying I thought that Tua is a better football player than Joe Burrow. And I also stated the same argument points as Marcellus in terms of, I just don't know if there's a large enough sample size of Joe Burrow for me to say I can trust that he's going to be the guy that had this one amazing magical season and won a national championship in the National Football League, yeah, especially in Cincinnati, a team that is really trying to find its way after winning what? Less games than your Chargers, right?
Man, you better chill over there.
Anymore, right? So when you look at it, I would take Burrow if it comes down to quarterback, but make no mistake about it, on a different day, a different argument, different discussion, I'm taking Chase Young with my number one pick. But that's just me. That's just me.
Well, you're a defensive guy.
That is true.
That makes sense. In regards to Joe Burrow and the one season, kind of the one-hit wonder, if you will, there are a couple of games in there that he played. Like, I would look at that and say, hey, like 11 times you lined up against unlike talent. Like, LSU is so talented. But you lined up against Alabama. That's like talent. You lined up against Oklahoma.
And you
lined up against Clemson, right? And you put points on the board. So I'm going to throw that argument away. The only reason that this is not an argument to me is because of the health of Tua. Mm. If Tua was completely healthy, if he wasn't quote-unquote injury-prone, then I think Tua would probably go number one overall. But the thing about being injured, and I spent a career being injured, your body is the greatest compensation machine there is. Mm. And when you have an injury, even if you don't even realize you're 100% healthy, you start to develop things, develop ticks, you just develop compensation mechanisms to overcome that injury. And I'm telling you what, when one side of your body breaks down, yeah, it's only a matter of time before other things start to break down. It's not only the hip. It's both ankles. Both ankles he's had surgery on. I just worry about the overall health of him, the longevity of Tua at the quarterback position. That's why if I'm Cincinnati, I'd probably stick with Burrow.
I don't believe anybody should be a lock to go number one. And it's not an indictment on Joe. You're doing yourself and your organization a disservice for you not to look at every avenue to improve your team. If you're set on Joe or whomever it is, you're not doing your due diligence and you might miss something or someone that might be better for your organization. Now, what I will say is this. I wouldn't worry about the injury history of Tua.
Thank you.
At his age, if you give me 6, 7, 8 good years, that was well worth the number one pick. Anything over that is gravy. I'm not worried about his injury history. Tua might be slightly a better quarterback physically, but what we can't see is Joe Burrow in between the ears. Mentally, he's really good. He processes information fast. He throws receivers open. He throws with anticipation. We don't understand. We can't see the magnitude of how good he is because that's a mental thing and not a physical thing. Now, splitting hairs, I think both of them are going to have really great careers.
I'm with you.
Now, a lock, I'm looking at every avenue to make my team and organization better. And that could be Joe Burrow, that could be Tua, that could be Chase Young, or that can be a trade because that's what I have to do. That's my due diligence to improve my organization.
Well, one thing that Joe Burrow said that caught my attention is something that I hear a lot of players sell to fans, but you can't tell it to players. I'm up here with champions, Pro Bowlers, all pros, guys who played at the highest level. And his quotes right here, they land well for most people, but not for me. I prepare better than anybody else. My physical traits are limited compared to some of the guys here. Everyone can see it. I have to be smarter. I have to prepare better. And I have to know what's happening before it happens so I can play fast. I know fans are applauding. I know that even the GM is applauding that because he could tell that to his owner who's sitting there on his private jet just landing.
That's the truth, though.
That ain't no damn truth. Man. One, let's get this straight. Do not marry hard work to success in the NFL. There are some dudes who struggle in NFL who work their tails off. So for you to come in and say that your entrance exam is I'm going to outwork everyone at the NFL level.
You can work your tail off.
That is lower level thinking.
But if you don't understand what you're doing as you're working, is it really going to pay off?
But TJ,
I can work really hard and get no results.
Hold on, he didn't say that. He said, so I'm going to outwork. No, you're not. No, you're not. Because at the NFL level, there's dudes who are fringe players, barely on the roster. Good luck beating them there in the morning. Good luck leaving after them. So we always do this thing like Peyton Manning, first in, last out. How about the fact that a lot of guys work hard in the NFL? You're not going to outwork them.
Do you know why he can say that?
Why?
Because he just had the greatest season we've seen a college quarterback have. So now I can say it, and then I just showed you what
you
I did.
You just made my point. You just married it to success. But how about in failure, people still work hard.
Sure.
Independent but of those results.
My big thing with him is you watch him on film, his ability to make decisions quickly, get off of one, get back to the backside, those things. Like, I think what separates players from good players from great players is not the physical ability, because everybody in the NFL that gets there has got physical ability. What I think it is the God-given mental ability for your eyes to see information, to process that information, and then to react. And you know what that is? That's just like running an elite level 40 time. You're either blessed with that ability or you're not blessed with that ability. Mm. And some guys cannot articulate a point, but you know what? They see something on
some
a football field
and
they're like
Columbia,
that.
And some guys can't.
You know,
right. Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
The most telling part of that quote is him saying, I have to know and study harder, know what's happening before it happens. So
I love that part.
Well, you're now calling coaches. You're now calling coaches out.
Mm.
So all the defensive coaches that are out there watching and seeing that quote, they're saying, oh, okay, so you're going to know what we're doing so that you can stay ahead and
football
play fast.
Football is universal.
But here's the thing. If one of your ingredients for your success mentally is I will prepare better than anyone else at the highest level.
You're already losing.
You already took an L, brother. Joined now by Fox NBA analyst Rick Bucher and three-time NBA champion B.J. Armstrong. Let's move to the association where the Nets are going through a big shakeup, firing coach Kenny Atkinson this week. Move comes less than a year into the Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving experiment. And while the two superstars have barely played this season, reportedly, they played a role in the team moving on from Atkinson. We all know both of these guys have had friction with players and coaches at their other NBA stops. So the question is, are KD and Kyrie a toxic combination? I will say no. I just think this is par for the superstar course. Mm. Let's use LeBron James as our example. When LeBron James was in Miami, he said, hey, I'm going back home, going back to Cleveland. Who's the coach up there? Oh, David Black? Oh, that's cute. All right, well, I'll go out there. Oh, we make it to the NBA Finals. Damn it, we lose. But you know what? Next year, with the best record in the East, David Black, you know what? We got close, but it'd be better if we can go all the way. Ty Lue's upgraded on the staff, and then I'll promote it. Then LeBron says, I want to go to L.A. Who's coach out there? Oh, Luke Walton. Yeah, I know his daddy. He cool. Okay, I'm going to go out there. Oh, this is cute. All right, Luke, you know what? It's time for you to go. What's happening is, and Michael Lee really said this well in his article for The Athletic, superstars pick location over organization. And they say, I want to go there. Oh, who's there? I don't know, don't care, does not matter. I'm going to go there, and then I'm going to fill this out. And one thing that was telling about this that is not toxic is just them making their calculated chess moves is that once Coach Atkinson was removed from his duties, who got inserted into the starting lineup?
That would be DeAndre Jordan.
Day one, who's been there all year as a backup and now gets his opportunity. So not toxic, just calculated.
Okay, but we're not talking about DeAndre. They didn't ask if DeAndre Jordan was toxic.
Right.
This is about Kyrie Irving.
It's part of the deal.
And
they
Kevin
got a big
Durant.
Three out of this.
Understood. And DeAndre Jordan was brought in part because Kyrie and KD wanted him there. But I reject this notion that, and because you're even insinuating, the reason the change was made was because of KD and Kyrie, whether you think it's toxic or not. I'm saying that the 29-34 record, I'm saying that the blowout against Memphis, the up and down performances by this team, and the desire for Kenny Atkinson to get out now and have the opportunity to get another job, he looks pristine right now. He looks like a martyr right now. Mm. This was by mutual interest to part ways at this time. So this idea that KD and Kyrie, look, they're not toxic. Knee-jerk storylines that look at what they've done before.
Oh, huge coincidence that they're there and he leaves. Oh, yeah, just coincidence.
Well, in this case,
No.
To automatically say they're the reason that this franchise moved on, as opposed to how Spencer Dinwiddie feels or DeAndre Jordan feels. These guys aren't even playing right
now.
What
do you think, Kenny?
They knocked them
out. So what do you think Kenny is thinking? Are you insinuating that Kenny wanted to leave right now?
In part, yes.
No.
Yes.
He won 20 games, 28 games, 42 games, get superstars. Oh, I want to leave. No, that's not how this goes.
No.
That's not how this plays. He wanted to finish this out with superstars.
Why?
Because you're the cherry on top. If you're the coach who gets to coach this, Frank Vogel feels right now?
So
he wants to leave or wants to coach this to a championship?
Oh, no. He's got that opportunity.
Yeah.
But if the team was going south and there were questions about Frank Vogel's contribution, which is the case here.
Yeah, I get
And BJ, you know this. You can't fool players in this locker room. You can't fool players in any locker room. Kenny wasn't doing a great job with end-of-game situations. And KD and Kyrie might have been talking about the bad habits that had developed with the team, but if you're not the kind of coach that can come back at KD and Kyrie and demonstrate, this is what we need to do, trust me, because I've, and this is where it came up short for Kenny Atkinson, because I coached the team to a 42-2
last year. He was doomed
like,
from the start.
Like, that ain't going to play doomed in that locker start. Room.
But in the coach's defense, I will say this. This team is currently, as we speak, in the seventh place. He's been able to do this minus not one, but both of these superstar players. And what are we saying to the rest of the team? Because whether you like it or not, this team is in the playoffs right now.
Thank you.
And they're playing very well, minus those two players. So,
29-30.
As whether or not he wants to be in, whether you're correct or anyone's correct, who wanted who out, the key is they're in the playoffs right now. And I don't understand the timing of it. So my question is, you have 20 games left in the season. Why couldn't you just wait to after the season to do this?
That's why, because it wasn't just the team making this decision. Kenny Atkinson looks at it and says, look, I led this team to a playoff spot. Everybody's going to blame Kyrie and KD. Let me get out now before we get exposed at the end of the year. And by the way,
how? What are you going to expose for?
Who says that they're going to make the playoffs? Who says that you're not going to have a revolt in that locker room with the players that are existing right now, that are playing right now? There were too many things that could potentially go wrong that would expose Kenny right now. And look, and I appreciate the job that he did, but there are certain times where the job may be too big for you in a certain instance. And this is the biggest problem that I have with this. Oh, Kenny Atkinson is being underserved in this situation. Lionel Hollins, Mark Jackson, Vinny Del Negro.
Yeah.
All of these guys won 50-plus games and got fired, and I didn't hear as much outrage at them being fired as a result.
Yeah, look, he was doomed from the start. When they looked at him, saw his Letterman jacket, not enough patches on it, they was like, hey, coach, you got to get out of here. But at least he saves face and gets another opportunity
forward. I would expect that he's going to get another job.
And that's going to happen. But let's move to Houston, guys, where earlier this week the Rockets got run off their own floor by the Magic. Now lost four straight. After the loss, Mike D'Antoni said the team had hit rock bottom. But a few days ago, GM Daryl Morey said the decision to go all in on small ball gives Houston the best chance to win with James Harden and Russell Westbrook. People have been calling Daryl Morey a genius for years, but the question here is he overrated? Huh? They've been calling him a genius. I would say, I don't know what you rated him.
That was his original nickname.
Yeah, I would say he's overrated. Two conference championship appearances. This been there 12, 13 years. And you're a genius just because you go to the Sloan Conference and sound as smart as everyone else there. That's not enough for me. I'm looking at this situation where it's funny. He put himself in this position saying, hey, I got two superstars and I want to just build around them with shooters. And I'm going all in offensively because I know we have our defensive limitations. With Capella on the court, we're the same team defensively, but not the same team offensively. So let's go all in with this style. So he goes all in with this style, and it comes out the gate, and they have some success.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, they start missing the three-pointers. And teams are starting to learn, hey, we got the film cycle. We know how to defend you better. We're going to always out-rebound you, giving us other opportunities. And then he comes out here in a genius manner, which is not too genius, and says, well, this is the only way we can win. Huh? The only way you can win, when you were constructing your roster, you're supposed to think of plan A and plan B. But now he's saying, this is the only plan I have, but he's the one that designed this plan. So to me, that's not genius. If you thought he was a genius, yeah, he was overrated.
They've gone to the playoffs 7 years in a row. There's only one franchise that has a longer streak of playoff appearances. The San Antonio Spurs.
Mm-hmm.
The what was overrated is the idea that analytics and utilizing analytics makes you a genius GM, or that that's the way that you can build a championship team. Overrated is Bill Simmons saying that Dork Elvis, Daryl Morey, was a genius because he got James Harden. That storyline is like a tick. The reality is James Harden was the sixth man and the third wheel in Oklahoma City and did not want to stay there. And the Oklahoma City Thunder made the best deal they possibly could, knowing they had to move James Harden. They were a seller, not a buyer in this situation. So that's the issue here. I look at what Daryl Morey has done, and he maintains this idea that the Rockets are always on the cusp of making something happen. We're always talking about them. We're always interested in them. As a GM, from a business standpoint, I can look at a lot of other teams and say they're not getting nearly as much done. And the fact of the matter is, they're always in the mix. His first 4 or 5 years, when they were struggling and they weren't getting anywhere, that was the time to question him. But everybody was in love with the analytics. 7 years in a row going to the postseason, I'm not going to say he's overrated. The storyline of what he does and how he does it, that is overrated.
Well, Daryl has done a masterful job over the last 6 or 7 years of controlling the narrative.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we're always talking about who's going to win the championship possibility. I think you just said it, Rick. They've gotten to the playoffs. That's about it. That's what we're expecting.
They've gotten to the conference finals
genius.
Twice.
Right, okay.
Seven years to the conference
3-1.
Finals twice.
Hamstring, up 3-1. Yeah, but that's not genius.
Okay, like, but if you're up 3-1 and you lose it, do you put that on your GM?
Well,
no. Put that on the timing, the injuries.
You put it on coaching. You can put it on the players. You can put it on a lot of things.
But however, what they have done, you know, is it's highly unlikely that this team is going to advance in the playoffs being a one-dimensional team. Sure. This small ball thing, how are you going to win in the playoffs playing one way? We all know that. Rick, you've covered this league for many years. I've played.
I'm not saying I buy into what they're doing right now.
The fact that Daryl,
don't misunderstand.
He doubles down. He gets ahead of the story. It gets us talking in the media. But I think we all know it. And now we're seeing it over the last 4 or 5 games. This league is very sophisticated. The coaches in this league, and they're going to adjust to it. And now they've adjusted, and you're seeing what's happening.
So based on the results, I could say good GM. I could say compelling as a GM and drawing interest. But genius? So when if I hear genius and you say rate this guy, does he fall above or under? I would have to say the under. That's why he's over there.
This doesn't say, is Daryl Morey a genius? It says, is Daryl Morey overrated?
Yeah, but when you say Daryl Morey, then what becomes synonymous with that is, oh, the genius talk, the analytics, how he's going to figure everything out mathematically and be more advanced than you are on the court. It's going to have to materialize. It hasn't fully.
No, it has not.
Right.
This is what I appreciate about what Daryl Morey has done. Because he's put together rosters more than once that I've looked at it and said, this isn't really about analytics. You don't go get a Dwight Howard if you're talking about analytics in this day and age and the way they supposedly wanted to play. But what's amazing is he gets a Dwight Howard and you're thinking, oh, they're screwed. And somehow he gets out of that. And now you got a Chris Paul. Mm. And now you got a Chris Paul and you're thinking, oh, now that, well, they're stuck with what they got.
Right.
And then you get a Russell Westbrook. Right. Like, he keeps changing the deck.
Mm.
There's a certain genius in that.
Yeah.
You got to give him that.
All right, well, I'll ask Carmelo Anthony next time I see him. Or Chris Paul, I'll see how they think about this. Marcellus Wiley here. Rick Bucher in the house. And BJ Armstrong are also back. Time now for Darnell's question of the day. Man, Darnell, what you got to say?
Yes, sir, man. Let's talk about LeBron James.
Okay.
Who just got named Player of the Week after leading the Lakers to some huge wins over the Sixers, Bucks, and Clippers.
Whatever.
In fact, LeBron's big week earned him some serious MVP buzz. And one thing everyone keeps talking about is how amazing it is LeBron is doing all of this at the age of 35. So I wanted to know, should LeBron's age be a factor in the MVP race?
You already know. Hell no. Hell no. This is such a kid mentality. This is some Pop Warner AU stuff. Oh, the 8 and 9 year olds, you stay together. The 9, 10, 11s, 12, 14 and under. We don't do that when you go pro, bro. When you go pro, there's fine print that says, as soon as you cross the white lines, I don't give a damn about your race, religion, background, mama, daddy, age, marriage. Meritocracy, and I'm here to protect the borders in spirit of not allowing age to be an attribute that we should weigh for you or against you. I don't want it to go either way. Look, I saw this play out last year in the NFL with Drew Brees, who had tremendous numbers, just like LeBron has tremendous numbers. But then you start to feel this fuel injection, this turbo boost. You're like, where'd that coming from? Oh, because he's old and doing it. I don't give a damn how old you are and doing it. LeBron and Giannis are in this two-man race, right?
Right.
And Giannis is top five in points and rebounds. And LeBron is top five in assists and turnovers.
Speak on it. Speak on it.
That's not good. This means the exactly. My point is this. LeBron doesn't have the numbers to even compare to Giannis. Giannis is not playing with a top five player like AD. But what we have to do is try to balance this out and give LeBron AARP points to help out his
I missed where they called him the 35-year-old player of the week. Did they name him the 35-year-old player? They just named him player of the week, right?
Yeah.
This is what I love. I love how, hey, you can't use that number. Yeah, let's not get numbers into this, but let me give you statistics. Ooh. Let me give you... Like, oh, so are we judging by numbers? Or are we not judging by numbers? Why don't we just judge by how they play? Because based on what I saw this weekend, I'm looking at wins and losses. I'm looking at how LeBron led his team. I wasn't looking at how many points he scored or how many Giannis scored or how many Kawhi Leonard scored. I looked at the results. And when I look at what the Lakers have done this year and what he has around him, I'm not saying LeBron deserves to be MVP because he's 35 years old. As a voter, I'm not looking at it. If AD wants to say it's amazing to be playing next to a 35-year-old who plays like that, he can well say that. That doesn't mean I'm voting for him as MVP because he's 35 years old. So my issue is, if we're just going to look at age and we're just going to look at statistics, why don't we even watch the games? Let's just look at the box scores at the end of the year and go, so-and-so scored the most points, so-and-so had the most rebounds. They must be the most valuable player in the league. It goes to, what do you do with your team? How do you lead it? What do you do within the game that may not show up in the box score? LeBron James is doing all those things. And I'm not saying that Giannis isn't. As I said, this is still a competitive race. I still haven't decided who's going to be at the top of my ballot. It's probably going to be one of these two. I would say it's going to be one of these two. But to say that LeBron James is like getting a turbo boost or like the only reason he's in the conversation is because he's 35 years old is not taking into account that they got the best record in the Western Conference.
Yeah, and they also don't have the best record in the NBA. So if we want to sit there, what are you doing with
Milwaukee.
Your team? No, you're four games behind Milwaukee in the win column. And let's be real. Take Giannis out of this and say Chris Middleton lead the Bucks. But then you say Lakers. Take LeBron out of this and AD go get this. I think that's going to be a better situation,
I'm not
a better
so
team.
Sure.
You don't have to be sure because, look, I want to state numbers. You don't want to.
As a voter, I have to be sure.
But with numbers... Obviously, Giannis wins. If you want to talk about construction, what you're dealing with and who you're working with, it's still Giannis. So I don't know where LeBron is.
Without taking anything away from Giannis, because Giannis has had an incredible,
I like where this started.
I want to make sure that we recognize this young man's brilliance, first of all. Giannis has been incredible. However, at 35 years of age.
Oh, here you go.
I must give LeBron credit for being able to play at this level at this age.
Wait a minute.
I have to give him credit,
BJ,
though.
You know
I like the
question,
way it started.
Right?
I don't like the way it ended.
BJ, you know the question, right?
Yes.
So are you going to use that in factory?
No. But I have to also recognize that we haven't seen a player at this age play at this level what he's doing right now.
We'll respect that on the History Channel.
No, we'll respect
that on the History Channel. We don't.
But I want to make sure.
Like you're giving him a senior discount.
I'm not giving him a discount. I'm just saying that we have to at least recognize this because we haven't seen a player in year 17 play.
Can I reset this for you, BJ?
Yes, you can.
Should LeBron's age be a factor in the MVP race, BJ Armstrong?
It should not be a factor.
Well, good. That's it.
It should not be a factor.
But it is.
But we have to at least recognize it.
Oh, so it is a factor.
So it is a factor. That's what they're doing.
Okay, well, we can call it a factor. But what I'm saying is, however you want to slice it and dice it, what he is doing, I have to at least applaud it. I have to at least applaud
it. Yeah, applaud it, but don't vote for it. Like, it's fine to applaud it and say, you the man, LeBron, I can't believe it. But once you step between the whites, protect that space. It's not about background, age, and any of these other issues. Giannis has better numbers this year
Giannis
than he did when he won MVP last year.
Giannis has better numbers.
I don't know about KD and Kyrie being toxic, but B.J. Armstrong was toxic to my point.
Oh, man. Marcellus Wiley here. LeVar Arrington, Mark Slareff, and TJ Houshmandzadeh all are in the building.
Sound
Let's
like
move
a rap
to
group.
Baker Mayfield right
Can
now.
We a rap group?
You know he the leader, though.
Yeah. Right,
it was just announced Oklahoma is going to put up a statue of Baker later this spring, but he's going to have to do a lot more if he ever wants to get one put up in Cleveland, where he just struggled through a disaster of a season. ESPN's Jeff Saturday said there was too much pressure put on Baker last year, and he definitely took a step back from his rookie year with big drop-offs in most of his numbers, but a big jump in interceptions. So the question is, are you confident Baker can bounce back from his sophomore slump? And I am not confident that he can bounce back. Sophomore slump, to me, is properly defined as someone in their second year regressing. And why did they regress? Because in their first year, thought it was a little easier than it really was. Too early success, and you start to say in the offseason, oh, I don't need to do it that way because the game wasn't as tough as I expected, anticipated. So now we talk about the mental makeup of a Baker Mayfield, who, let's be real, had his limitations coming out of college to the tune of people were shocked that he even went number one. I think he's cognizant of those limitations, but is he going to fix them? When a guy comes into this offseason after having that sophomore slump and says, I don't need any quarterback coaches and gurus to work with me. I know what is wrong with me. If you did, would you have not fixed it in one of those 16 games? But you didn't. So my confidence is shaken because what I saw last year in the mental makeup of Baker Mayfield, I'm not so certain that he's going to return to that first year rise.
See, I disagree. I think he will. And I think he's in the perfect place, in the perfect position to have that bounce back year. Why? When have we seen Baker Mayfield perform at his highest and at his best? From the underdog's house, right? So not only is Baker coming from the underdog position this year, but so is Odell. So is Miles, Garrett. There are tons. You could even throw Jarvis on there. You could throw the entire team on there that they're coming from the underdog's perspective this year. That has been when Baker has been his best. And keep in mind, there was a lack of leadership. It sounds like from what you're saying, it probably was a lack of accountability.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that looking at it now, humble pie has been served to this group. And they're sitting there and they've heard the critics. They've heard what they've had to say. And I can almost guarantee if they are the type of competitors that have led to them getting to the point of where they are in their careers now, they will have bounce back years.
Well, there's IQ, right? Intelligence quotient. There's EQ, emotional quotient. And I think the emotional part is, to me, the more important part. How you deal with the issues that you have, the pressures that present themselves as a football player. And you look at the Browns as an organization in general, and you can look at them since they came back in the league in 1999. They haven't dealt with it well. And now for Baker Mayfield, like, I don't care what the reality is, the perception becomes stronger than the reality. Hey, dude, you didn't play well, and you filmed every commercial under the sun that you possibly could have filmed. That looks like you didn't put your work in. You may not have missed a workout, but the bottom line is when people start to pick at your stuff, get at you, does it bother you? And you could see the focus of Baker Mayfield basically becoming snarky, basically becoming, you know, getting at people. Like, you have to be able to deal with that, especially at that position, especially at the quarterback position. So, like, I don't have a ton of confidence that he's got the emotional maturity to handle that position. Maybe he will. Here's the other part. He's going to come into an offense under Kevin Stefanski, the new head coach, who was a coordinator at Minnesota. That is an under center. We want to run the ball the majority of time. We want to set up our play action. If you're looking to have a huge bounce back year and say, this is about me, this offense ain't about you. This offense is about the structure of the offense, and you're going to have to operate in that structure. Can you do that? There's a lot of questions that have to be answered.
I'm going to say no, and I'm going to keep it strictly to football because I don't know Baker Mayfield personally. But when you have three head coaches in 3 years, three different offensive coordinators in 3 years.
It's tough.
The organization you play for at the top is dysfunctional. How can I expect everything else to work if we're not working at the top?
Did and you so say LeVar Arrington or Baker Mayfield? what name did you just
I just sleep at night.
I look at that and say, yeah. How can he perform? And then if Stefanski, if that's what he wants to do, to me, the offense really should be what fits Baker. That's what great coaching is. I'm not going to make a player conform to what I want to do. I'm going to fit this offense to what he does well. So if he doesn't do that, then he for sure is going to crash and burn, because now the coach is saying, I believe in my offense more than I believe in you. I'm not going to change my offense to fit you. So if that is the case, he's going
to
struggle.
Yeah. I mean, look, I hate to get into that whole perception versus reality, but that is a great point in terms of you trying to build your confidence back up, you trying to build yourself back up as a football player, and how that's being received and how that's being perceived really makes it tough on him. He sniped at his teammates, reporters, coaches before. And grandma always said, the way you go in is the way you're going to come out, baby. And I remember meeting Baker Mayfield before the draft, and I didn't meet him first. I met an assistant, and I met someone with a camera, and they were all documenting it all. And then that turned into commercials everywhere. It just seems like he's a guy, as Coach would say, wears his cleats on the red carpet, which means, be careful, brother, what's most important?
Is if he is surrounded by the weapons that if you're going to bounce back,
yeah,
you got the guys around you. If you can't bounce back with this, it's bad.
Let's talk about another quarterback who's trying to bounce back. My man, Cam Newton, who missed most of last season to injury. Looked like the writing was on the wall for the Panthers to move on from Cam, but the quarterback posted a video of himself working out at the Panthers facility this week. And new head coach Matt Rhule already said he wants to coach the former MVP. So the question is Cam the Panthers' best option at quarterback next season? Not only is he the best option, he's a great option and a cheap option at $19 million next year. It's almost like a one-year rental for those naysayers who's like, I don't know about Cam Newton. He can't stay healthy, and even when he is healthy, he's not the same guy. I look at Cam Newton as this is a guy who's going to redeem himself, the potential, the way that the game has changed, and is really going to highlight his skill set in terms of mobility and the fact that he had improved accuracy before the injury, MVP conversation before the injury. This is a guy that I think is in the best situation because he's comfortable, he has equity there, and he's going to be allowed to go out there and prove himself one more year. Cam Newton back against the wall. We saw what happened in college at Auburn, 1 year, championship, perfect season. I think he's going to return to that form.
You know, I'm going to use what you used in the last part discussion, perception versus reality. And the perception of it is that Cam, it should be the guy, could be the guy. But the reality of it is that you cannot base what you're going to do off of something you don't know, right? Yeah. So it has to be a no for me, not because of what I in my mind, I perceive Cam to be as a player, his ability level, his accuracy, his athleticism, his leadership, all of those things we know he has. But how long do I have it for? Am I going to take as a first-year head coach, as a new owner of the team, trying to go in a different direction and build what this organization is going to look like philosophically moving forward? Is this what I'm going to place the weight of what we're trying to do on? Does he have the shoulders and the health to be able to carry that forward? I would not have the belief based off of just how durable is he. I just would not trust it at this point. And if you take the gamble and you win, you look great. But if you take that gamble and he does break down and he isn't healthy, I think that's a hard pill to swallow, and it's a mess to clean up during the season.
But I would disagree in this. I don't know how much of a gamble it is. I mean, is Allen or Greer more of a gamble? Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, Cam Newton gives you the best opportunity to be successful this year. Now, you may draft a guy. I think they have the 7th overall pick. Maybe you go after a guy. Maybe you draft a guy as the heir apparent. But right now, like, I look at their roster, and I've seen their roster up close and personal on several different occasions last season. I'm like, he gives you your best chance to win. If he is healthy, there's the big question, the big if question. But if he is healthy enough to play. And I believe the shoulder, I mean, this is the second year out from the shoulder. Remember, last year it was a foot that ended up ending his season. So
I'm 20 years out from my knee, and it still hurts today.
Amen. But you know what? You and me both. But you know what? When you're playing, you can play.
Well, that's fair.
And so he gives them their best opportunity to be successful this year under what you said is nothing. I mean, that's $19 million for a starting quarterback in this league.
Dak is going to double
that's
that.
That's change, change in the couch cushions of the owner. So, to me, I think that he gives you your best opportunity.
Yeah, I'm with y'all on that one. And the reason I'm with you is, what's the other option?
Right.
What's behind door number two? What is – we all want to win as coaches. If the coaches, they want to win. What's my option behind door number two? Is it Teddy Bridgewater, possibly giving him close to $30 million a year? Is it a free agent quarterback that is uncertain? Mm. Or what offense are we going to run with Joe Brady? We don't even know what that's going to look like. And so if it's anything, read option or what they did at LSU, you say, let's see what Cam can do. He'll turn 31 in May. He's the best option because what is our next option? And that's unknown.
Yeah, I mean, Joe Brady turned Joe Burrow into what Joe Burrow became. Give him Cam Newton in that talent base. Who knows what could happen? LeVar Arrington, Mark Schlereth, and TJ Houshmandzadeh are back. Ooh. Let's move to the Rams, stay in LA, who are dealing with some drama this offseason and not just about that ugly new logo they just put out. Y'all wrong. Reportedly, Sean McVay wants to talk with Todd Gurley about last season, which was a down year for the running back. But Gurley doesn't sound all that interested, saying, quote, I'm more of a guy where if there ain't nothing to talk about, then there ain't nothing to talk about.
Okay.
But if we got something to talk about, could talk. Mm-hmm. Coach got my number. I know what I'm capable of in football. Mm-hmm. I know the stuff where I can get better. Like we said, football is a business. Mm-hmm. So anything can happen. But you got to understand it as a player and not take it personally.
I got my money.
The question is, are the Rams done with Todd Gurley?
Sound like Todd.
No. But the squeeze is on. Mm-hmm. One, we already had an exit meeting, so what the hell we got to talk about now? You didn't tell me all this before? Oh, you want to talk to me to see if I'm chump enough to say I give some of this back.
Yeah.
And I've been in that position before, and I should have gave it back when I was with the Chargers. I was the ego. You start thinking, oh, I could steal ball.
That's new for you.
Yeah.
That's new. Marcellus, you're growing.
Oh, hold on. Coronavirus. Chill, though. Right. Give me that.
All right. All right.
And I've been in that position before where they're just trying to, you know, they're trying to tenderize you, trying to soften you up and see, You ready for this count right, that needs
that
to be?
Right there.
But they try to approach Jared Goff, and then they said, nah, that doesn't make much sense because the inflation and the fact that if you post it back in a restructured contract, it's going to inflate on us. But Todd Gurley is a player that they look like they have a case for. Todd Gurley did not perform well last year. Todd Gurley didn't even eclipse 100 yards rushing any game last year. So they have a case. But Todd Gurley also has a case say, y'all didn't give me the opportunities.
True.
And this comes back to a conversation of conviction. Nothing happens by coincidence in the NFL. They watched him in offseason. They watched him in practice and realized he doesn't look the same, so we're not going to give him the same opportunities. Simple as that. But they didn't play it that way fully, so now they have a conversation and an argument, a tug-of-war with Todd Gurley. I think he stays on the roster, but certainly going to try and squeeze him.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I think they are certainly done with Todd Gurley for one reason or another, whether it's being able to figure out how to use him within the offensive scheme, whether it's dealing with, you know, him making as much money as he makes and not being as productive as they like for him to be. But the reality here is that Todd Gurley counts for $21 million and dead cap money.
He's there.
You're going to be there. You're going to try to figure out. So if it's not a conversation about, hey, Todd, can we have a discussion about how much you're making? Can we figure out if we can get back some of that milk and sugar that you borrowed from us? I don't think that's going to be the conversation. I think it's going to be a hard conversation where it's like, look, we don't use you as much as we were anticipating using you. Where do we go from here? How do we figure this out? And this is one of those moments in time. I can recall I gave money back. I gave $2.5 million. You know, this is breaking news. Some people thought I got released from the Redskins. I gave $2.5 to get out in time enough to find a new team. So even if his cap is super high in dead money, which I don't think he would do this, but if you're going to have a discussion like, look, we're not going to use you, and if you want to go somewhere else, let's talk about how we can figure out a structured way for you to get out of this and get to the next team. That could be what's going on.
Are the Rams done with Todd Gurley? Is Todd Gurley done with the Rams?
Truth.
I mean, he got hurt. He was MVP type of season in 2018. He got hurt. There was something that went on that we weren't privy to toward the end of that season through the Super Bowl. You and I watched the Super Bowl together. He was not the same player that he was the first 10 weeks of the season. No. And nothing ever came out. And you know who looks bad in that situation? Even if it's the team that says, hey, let's not tell anybody about this, let's not report this.
It's the team.
That, like, you look bad as the player. Ooh. And then last year, you lose Roger Saffold, who's one of the best blocking guards in football. You lost John Sullivan, and all of a sudden it's Todd Gurley's fault that he's not good.
Right.
Right? Like as a player, you're like, wait a minute, I'm the one that takes the brunt of all this nastiness in the public, and you guys are the ones that made the decision. I don't, you know, like, why do I have to put up with that?
It's what you said. You lose two offensive linemen, but all this is going to come to a head. March 15th, he has a guaranteed roster bonus of $7.5 million. What they going to do with that? So in March 20th, his base salary becomes fully guaranteed. So those days, we'll tell everything. We'll know.
Marcellus Wiley with LeVar Arrington. Uncle Jimmy is here to talk about our approval ratings for
you.
Dak Prescott.
No!
You! No! But who's the big dummy of the day next to me?
Yeah.
Right. Big dummy of the day goes to the person that was not impressed with old man LeBron James.
Oh, damn.
Performing every night. Giving it everything he got.
But got Laker purple on.
Got Laker purple on.
Got that blue pill, too.
Spoken like a true young man. You're going to learn to respect this game.
I ain't talking to you right now.
Oh, dummy. Man.
Let's talk Dak Prescott. I don't want to hear about that.
Give it time.
Man. Whose offer from the Cowboys reportedly keeps getting bigger and bigger, with the latest topping the $33 million a year deal they offered just last week. NFL just extended the deadline for using the franchise tag until Monday. LeVar.
Yeah.
You think this deal gets done before the deadline?
I don't believe it gets done before the deadline,
don't
Marcellus.
Believe.
I think they're too far apart on their philosophies in terms of what that number represents.
I'm with you there. I think this is just a jump start, but they won't get this deal done until July.
Oof.
Yeah. Mm. What you got, Uncle Jimmy? What you think?
Man, I feel sorry for Jerry Jones right about now. Sorry. Yeah, man, Jerry Jones looking for love in all the wrong places. See, he ain't never been able to let go of his first real true love, Troy Aikman. See, that's been the standard barrier that every other relationship he done had done been compared to ever since.
Barrier.
See, Troy was a dime, and ain't nobody questioning that.
He was a dime?
He was a dime, and they had a long, prosperous relationship.
Long.
Yep. Hey, it bore three Super Bowl rings.
Three babies.
And then, check this out. Jerry didn't even care. I mean, Troy didn't even care nothing about Jerry Jones being out there late at night having them menage a trois with Emmitt Smith and Michael Irvin. Hey, and he's been trying to recreate that ever since. Oh. What man wouldn't want that? Then he got to the point he found himself in a midlife crisis.
Spoiled.
Asking himself questions like, why in the hell did I have a one-night stand with Quincy Carter?
I'll catch up with you.
Leave my boy alone.
Why did I hook up with Drew Bledsoe at Freakney?
Got him.
Then he thought, you know, he messed around and went to that website, wherewhitepeoplemeet.com.
Oh, wow.
Then he thought he found true love and met Tony Romo.
Oh, God.
You know? And then, sure enough, soon as Tony Romo went out of town, what'd Jerry Jones do?
Wait a
minute. Met Dak Prescott and messed around and got in his feelings. Hey, Tony Romo got wind of it, and what'd he do? He wasn't having none of it. Cook-off ran off with Jim Nance and been shacking up in that booth ever since. See, man, I'm telling you, Jerry done completely misplayed this situation.
Oh, man.
He done found himself in love with a woman he can't stand.
T-Pain.
You ever been in a situation where you didn't want your woman, but you didn't want nobody else to want her either? That's where Jerry Jones is right now.
Too many times.
Oh, that's gang right there.
He spent all last season treating Dak bad, hoping that he leave. Because he couldn't let it go on his own.
Think you better let it go.
See, he done got caught all up in the swirl. Lost in the sauce, as they say. See, now Jerry Jones, now Jerry Jones got to learn the hard way.
What's that?
He done went back. He can't never come back.
He can't go back.
He done went back.
Let's get to our approval rate, man. Low. Oh, he gonna give him his money.
Once you go back, you ain't never coming back.
I got him at 60, man. And he's getting more gangster. I like the authenticity right now. He's like, look, I've been taking these discounts for a long time because I've outplayed this contract. Give me my money. 60, role player for me.
I like it. I give him 74. Obviously, I think he gets high ranks in character. He has done well with his job performance, so I give him a total of 74. All-star. Get your money, player.
But yeah. Don't you hate it when they outplay their contract?
Well,
they put you in that position.
What's the day you talking about right now? Because I don't know Uncle Jimmy.
You know what I'm talking about. Both of y'all know.
We talking about Uncle Jimmy or are we talking about Dak?
Yeah.
We talking about Dak and women.
Oh, man.
You know when they outplay their contract.
Oh, man. I can't talk to you right now. See, the thing is...
If you love it, then you should have put a ring on it.
Uh-oh.
If you love it, then you should have put a ring
uh-oh.
On it.
It's coming.
Uh-oh.
Let's see what the country, the world thinks right now.
Come on,
they just arguing about when they're going to get married. That's all they talking about. Ooh, dumpster.
And it ain't right. happening.
Dak Prescott, the whole country, the whole world thinks that he's a dumpster fire. Mm. They're going to be saying that when he make it $36 million a year.
He going to make a dumpster fire.